Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation with the Great Pretender.
Oh, yes.
This goes out to Mr. Ned Allen. Ned Allen, you're facing 5 years of imprisonment. Ned Allen, you're going away for 5 years for what you've done, Ned.
I pretend too much.
And now I'll tell you what I'm talking about. All right, turn the music off. A pseudonym by the name of Ned Allen, a faker who uses that name, has posted my home addresses and my office addresses on various internet and service sites. Today I've been in touch with the U.S. Postal Inspector, various police inspectors, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I have found out that this Mr. Ned Allen, of course it's a pseudonym, and we will find him, make no mistake about it. We're going to sue the website. We're going to sue the servers. We're going to penetrate the corporate veil. And we're going to find out who the IP is, the address of this so-called Ned Allen. And when we find him, we're going to prosecute him to the full extent of the law. Yesterday in my offices, we received male homosexual pornography that was delivered without any wrappers around it. The most vile imagery you could imagine was delivered by the U.S. Postal Service and received by young girls who work in the office who were appalled and brought it to their supervisor who turned it over to me. Now, apparently the same Ned Allen thinks he's having a good time and he's hiding and he can get away with this. What he doesn't know is that he's in violation of Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Rule Number 1735. He has committed a felony. When we catch him, the U.S. Postal Inspector, the U.S. Attorney's Office may or may not, but I will certainly seek to fine or have him imprisoned for 5 years. I will also sue the websites and the servers who are posting this man's material, which is my address. Now, I'm going to talk today about privacy theft. We've talked a lot. You've heard a lot in the media about identity theft. And we understand that criminals do this in order to gain access to your identity and your credit cards to steal your credit, in essence. But has anyone had a discussion recently about privacy theft? And why privacy is so critical in a consumer-based society. The fact of the matter is, I'm going to ask listeners to this show, mainly police, detectives, attorneys, have you ever prosecuted cases like this? You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. And to the Mr. Ned Allen who sent the graphic homosexual propaganda to my office, you have violated Title 18 of the U.S. Code 1735. You've committed a felony, according to people I've spoken with. The web server who has provided you with your access to this is going to go to jail and be sued. I'm warning all of you. If you think you're going to tamper with Michael Savage and others because you're left-wing scum and you're just having fun with a guy whose politics you don't like, trust me, I'm going to follow this until you're in jail. I'm putting you away. Now, I'm going to give Mr. Ned Allen a chance right now. Mr. Ned Allen, I know you're listening to this show because sneaks like you work in the dark. You get off on your privacy, but you like to take other people's privacy and expose it, don't you? And that's because you're a coward. You're a worm. In real life, you're nothing. I'm going to give you an opportunity to call my number at 800-449-8255, Mr. Allen. And if you call within the next hour and you give up your name and your address and your phone number, I may not prosecute you. I may choose not to prosecute you. On the other hand, Mr. Ned Allen, or whoever you may be, if you do not call that number or do not call the San Francisco Police Department within the hour and give yourself up, I will prosecute you to the full extent of the law. And I want to remind you, sending sexually oriented material of this nature through the mail without solicitation, without the request for it, is a violation of Title 18 of the U.S. Code 1735. You have committed a felony. You're going to be fined or you're going to be imprisoned for 5 years, Mr. Ned Allen. You turn yourself into the SFPD right now. You tell them what the case is, that you've been sending unsolicited pornography to Michael Savage's offices and home, that you have posted his home address on various websites hoping somebody will kill him or hurt him, Mr. Ned Allen. And I may not go after you in the courts, Mr. Ned Allen. But I warn you, if you don't do it within the hour, Mr. Ned Allen, I am going to hunt you down. I have lawyers. I have the postal inspector. I'm going to get the FBI on you. I'm warning you. You're going away, my friend. Now, if this is of no interest to any of you out there, I suggest you listen carefully, because what has happened to me over the last few weeks can happen to you. The left wing is out of control in this country. They think that they're going to win through Hillary Clinton or Obama, and they think that when they win, they can get away with breaking the law by harassing and threatening people on the right. Well, I got news for all of them. We are all entitled to equal protection under the law, and I can guarantee you that even if one of these far-left people should win the presidency, you're going to jail. I can tell you right now that it's more likely that you'll go to jail if a Democrat wins than it is if a Republican wins. And that's because the Republicans are worthless when it comes to helping anybody. The Democrats, on the other hand, in order to show that they really care, might actually do more for me than you. But I'm warning all of you out there, what has happened to me can happen to you. Imagine going into your office and having young girls who work for you coming in with almost tears in their eyes as they give you unsolicited homosexual pornography that was sent with men showing their genitals. Now, I want you to think about this. I want you to think of the mailman in my county who would deliver this. I want you to think of the idiot who drives a mail truck who would deliver a thing like this and not turn it over to a postal inspector on his own. I'm going to see if I can have that postal delivery man, that postman, fired. I'm going to see what I can do to him as well. Now I'm going to take some callers. Right now I have Jeremy in Chicago. Jeremy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, in response to your question regarding the prosecution of the pornography that you received in the mail, I'm a postal inspector, have been for the last several years, and you cited the correct statute as far as the enforceability of the pornography that was sent to you.
Right.
However, because you are located in San Francisco, one of the most liberal areas in the nation, the U.S. Attorney's Office has a very broad range of discretion with regard to what's considered, in your words, vile or obscene.
If the duty attorney in the U.S. Attorney's Office, whose name is Will Frentzen, he's on duty this week, chooses not to pursue this case, it will be duly noted in his case record that he chose not to pursue male pornography, male homosexual pornography that was sent in an unwrapped package to an office that didn't request it. And we'll see if it helps his career.
Dr. Aston, what I would do if I were you is contact the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, San Francisco Division Headquarters. They're right there in San Francisco.
Oh, no. Listen, I've been in touch with them. I had a very nice man from that office go through this with me, and he said that you have a 5-year imprisonment for this man when we catch him. And he said, it's up to you to pursue it. And I said, I'm going on the air today. It's the beginning of the show. I'm going to give him an opportunity, he's ever doing this to us, to turn himself in today. If he doesn't do it, I'm going to pursue it. If he does do it, I may drop the charges and let it go at that. Maybe he'll learn a lesson. But that's all I'm going to do. Otherwise, I'm going after him with everything I have in me. The internet has become a nightmare and a disgrace. The internet has granted a lot of freedom to a lot of people and a lot of hell to a lot of other people, and the internet needs to be controlled. As far as I am concerned, the internet needs to be reined in and controlled by the U.S. government. That's my opinion.
Did the postal inspector that you speak with encourage you to preserve the evidence and try not to handle it just in case they want to try and...
Well, no, I know about that. No, these were handled by too many people to be of any value, but I have an inspector coming to my home tomorrow who's going to receive all of the material, including the original letter. Now, I want to say this, Jeremy. My home addresses were published by this individual who sent the pornography. I know it's the same person. This happens every few years on talk radio. He's trying to get somebody to hunt me down. What he doesn't know is he's violated the state of California anti-stalking laws. He's going to go to jail, both state and federal. I'm going to catch him. And if he doesn't turn himself in, I will see if I can get him prosecuted, and I think I can, because he has committed a felony by the comments of the postal inspector. Thank you for the call. So we're talking not about privacy theft. Yes, privacy theft is the issue. Has anyone out there been the victim of privacy theft? And if you'd like to talk about it, fine. You heard the first caller was a postal inspector. I have the best attorneys in the nation looking at it. My syndication company has an attorney looking at it. Let us say some other powerful attorneys are looking at it. We're going to find this person. The faker named Ned Allen will be found. Mr. Ned Allen, I'm giving you, you have exactly 43 minutes to call 1-800-449-8255. Identify yourself as the man who sent this material. Say that you are the pseudonym Ned Allen. Give us your identity. And I may not prosecute you, but I warn you, Mr. Ned Allen, if you don't call within this hour, you're going to jail. I am going to track you down by every legal means possible. The corporations that I work with have unlimited funds. They will find you in your hidden cell in San Francisco. You will be uncovered. You'll be dragged before a court. You will be going away for 5 long years, my friend. And Mr. Ned Allen, if you own anything, you may as well kiss it goodbye, because I will take it from you. Have a nice day, Mr. Ned Allen. You've been found out. Now I'll be right back.
Savage.
If you just turned on the Savage Nation, here's what's going on. For quite a while now, I've been receiving, well, for 15 years, I've received threats of various kinds, and I've learned to live with it. In the most recent past, and I never talk about it because it's boring for you, it's something that anyone who's in the public eye receives. However, yesterday was the last straw. At my office, the mailman, the moron mailman, delivered pictures of naked men with their genitals exposed, homosexual postcards, as it were. The girls who work in the office were just shocked. They were almost in tears from the disgusting nature of it, S&M and whatnot. Now, the mailman should not have delivered these. They were not in a plain brown wrapper. They were there. The mailman's a moron. The mailman should be put in jail for having carried it into the office. But that's a second story. This very same individual who's sending it, because I know it's the same person, or I suspect it is, has been sending threats, posted my home address and whatnot on certain sites. I have the name of the servers, the websites. They're going to be sued. They're going to lose everything they have. The government has the right to penetrate the veil and to sue them. And we're talking today about privacy theft. I have given this individual who goes by the pseudonym Ned Allen the chance to turn himself in within the next 37 minutes to the San Francisco Police Department today, or to call the screener at this show and identify himself. And I may choose not to prosecute you. I just said I may. If, on the other hand, you don't do that, I'm going to prosecute you to the full extent of the law. I'm going to get someone to prosecute you, whether it's federal or local or state. You violated 3 different codes here. Now I'm talking to the friends of Ned Allen. I'm sure that Ned Allen has a large group of friends in his circle in San Francisco. And Ned's been having a lot of fun telling his friends how he's been harassing that right-winger Michael Savage by threats and whatnot and sending this pornography in the mail. If you are a friend of this pseudonym Ned Allen, I'm warning you, you may be held liable for the damages. You may be held liable for the felony he has committed, and I will pursue you as well for conspiracy. I'm warning all of you to call that number and turn Ned Allen in right now. If you know who this Ned Allen is, I will not prosecute you. This I can guarantee you. If you will turn him in to my screener or to the SFPD, I will not prosecute you if you're a friend of this Ned Allen. If, on the other hand, you do nothing and you let these crimes go unnoted, I will find out who you are as well. We will depose all of the friends of Ned Allen once we find him. And if you know anything about this and you refuse to disclose the crimes he's committing, you're going to jail. You'll lose your property. I want you to understand something. This is not a joke. You're playing with my life. I will fight you with everything I have. I'm warning you. I'm warning you that I didn't get where I am by being a wimp or a wuss and I roll over easily. I will follow you to the end of the earth. I will bury all of you. I'm warning you. If you know who this creep is who's sending that homosexual pornography, who's posting my home address, I warn you to call the SFPD now and identify him and call my number, 800-449-8255, and do so. I'm warning all of you. I'm warning all of you. Jim, KNEW, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, I'm a member of a California Historical Society, and I recognize the name Ned Allen right away. He owned a saloon here in the city, and it was a notorious saloon on Pacific Street in the 1860s, and it was so rough that his girls working for him, called pretty waiter girls back then, would get drunk on liquor and pass out, and the men of the place would have their way with them.
This pseudonym Ned Allen is also found in a novel that didn't get widely read, about an office worker who gets fired and downsized. So the name has been picked up perhaps from the bar owner. I don't know who it is, but there's somebody in this city using it. And I know it's coming out of San Francisco, and we will catch him. It's not that hard to do, Jim. Remember, he uses that pseudonym when he went to a server in Georgia where he posts my name and whatnot and threats. So therefore, if we sue the server, which we're going to do, they will have to divulge who this person is. You follow me?
Good, good. Okay, well, I didn't know if I...
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Pennsylvania, Hagen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, please. Michael?
Yes.
How are you doing, Michael?
Please, sir, make your point.
No, you got a lot going on with a lot of different issues. I just want to tell you first and foremost, sir, I'm in Bedford, Pennsylvania, and I thank you for speaking on behalf of, I'm 51 years old. Thank you for speaking on behalf of my 83-year-old father, doing well, tank commander.
Megan, could you please tell me what you called about today, sir?
I just want to thank you so much for your guidance. But back to the thing, don't shoot the messenger. That mail carrier that dropped this filth and trash off at your house, he was just doing his job. I am not.
Hold on now. Are you telling me that a mailman does not know that pictures of men with their genitals exposed is not a violation of Mail Code Title 18 U.S. Code 1735, that he's going to carry that into somebody's house and throw it in the mailbox? That man is brain dead. Or he's complicit in the desire to embarrass and to insult the girls in my office. What do you mean, don't blame the mailman? What, is he a moron?
I agree with you, sir, but...
All right. Well, the mailman in Mill Valley, California. Hey, heads up, mailman in Mill Valley, California. You're going to be looked at pretty good with the microscope, too, my friend. If you know why you delivered this, you better let us know real fast. Because you're not off the hook yet either, Mr. Mailman.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about privacy theft in this hour. There are other stories. The lead stories on michaelsavage.com are, now this is a shocker. It says, Quran abuse draws hate crime charge. Now, I have a question for you. A student took paperback copies of the Quran from the campus library and threw them in the toilet. How can a book be the victim of a hate crime? Can anyone explain that to me? Is the book suing? How can the university sue a student for having committed a hate crime? Now, I'm against throwing Bibles or Qurans or Torahs in the toilet, but I'd like to know who was the victim of the hate crime. I can't quite figure out. Was the toilet the victim? Was the Quran the victim? Who was the victim here? It seems like there's no victim. This is total insanity. And yet the university, Pace University, is taking a student who's going to face hate crime charges for throwing paperback copies of the Quran into the toilet. It seems to me that a few years ago, the vermin at Brooklyn Museum put a crucifix in urine and thought it was art. I'll never forget their names. Two disgusting pastrami eaters from Brooklyn thought it was a joke. They took a crucifix and put it in urine. The Catholics were outraged, and they snickered all the way, and they got away with it. But here a Quran was thrown in a toilet, and the student who did it's going to face a hate crime charge. Here's another story. Did Dr. Death kill patient for organs? A San Francisco transplant surgeon was charged Monday with giving overdoses of medication to speed up the death of a man at a hospital to harvest his organs. His name is Dr. Hutan Ruzroch, 33. They say that Dr. Hutan Ruzroch, 33, prescribed excessive amounts of medication to kill the patient. It's on michaelsavage.com. Nice fella. You know, the third world is producing such great doctors for America. It's so wonderful that we have third world doctors wherever we go. It really is. And by the way, you know, there are diseases in our hospitals now that have not been seen for 100 years. The rates of infection in hospitals. You ask anyone who goes in for surgery or treatment in a hospital, they're all coming out with an infection. Does anyone figure out how we've gone back to the age before Lister? How can we have we gone back to the age before Lister? The answer is because we have unqualified third world doctors and nurses. We have patients coming in from tribes all over the world who don't know the first thing about sanitation or hygiene, and they are bringing contaminants into the hospitals. The hospitals are now becoming like something out of Dickens as a result of the invasion of this third world invasion into the United States of America. This third world invasion is destroying our nation day by day. And the fact of the matter is the elites who run this government could care less. They don't go to your hospital. They go to a nice lily white hospital in Washington, D.C. that is scrubbed nice and clean with Listerine. Biloxi, Mississippi. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I'm sorry?
Yes, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. You might be able to get a telephone number. Had another threat come across the national airlines for somebody that was sending gay porn to email for another show.
Sorry, so you're not making any sense. Please, what are you saying?
I'm saying that the same thing that happened to you happened less than a month ago to another person on the air that's nationwide.
Who? Who?
The Schnitt Show.
I'm sorry, who?
Todd Schnitt out of Tampa. He had a man.
Okay, I don't know the gentleman, but he's a local talk show host, and what, he got porno too, gay porno?
Right. The man had been sending him the gay porno straight to his email site, so the call screener might have a telephone number.
This is not. No, you mixed this one up. It's not to my internet site. It's to my office. And young women saw it, so we'll catch him. Kansas City, Stu, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael, this is Stu in Rosedale, Kansas, calling. I love you, Mike, but I'm just a little, disappointed in you or surprised, I guess, that you're giving this Ned Allen guy, that you're letting him get you so upset. I mean, the elephant doesn't get all bent out of shape over a flea, and this guy is a flea.
Well, that's easy for you to say. But why don't you get back to me if your home address was put on the internet with an invitation to do you any harm, Stu? Would you feel the same way?
Well, no, Michael. I understand how you feel, but still,
you don't understand how I feel. What you have to understand is I'm going to catch this man as a result of talking about it, Stu. As a result of talking about it, as a result of telling him he's violated Title 18 of the U.S. Code 1735, as a result of telling him and everyone else that I've spoken to the U.S. Postal Inspector and detectives who are on his trail, I'm going to catch him. And I'm trying to get this man to stop today, because when I do catch him, I'm going to prosecute him to the full extent of the law, Stu. This is not a joke, doing this to a man.
Not a joke. I hope you do prosecute. I hope he gets his...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Easy for you to say I should move on to other things, and I will, when I'm good and ready to do it. And if you find this boring, I'm sorry. It's part of my life. I've given 15 years of my life to the conservative causes on talk radio. It was I who stopped the immigration amnesty bill. It was I who stopped the Dubai ports deal. It was I who got Harriet Myers thrown out of the position before she got it. So don't assume that what I do here is a joke. And so therefore, if I have to indulge you for an hour once every few years on a thing like this, you'll have to forgive me. That's all. Maybe I'm trying to enlist the help of people by doing this, by broadcasting this. Somebody out there knows who this person is, and they're going to turn him over. Now, it's not just me. I got to tell you something. It's not just me. I can tell you why I am personally not worried. It's about my family. I'm not personally worried. I hope to God this guy confronts me, because he's going to come away very unhappy if he confronts me. I can guarantee you he loses, not me. That's number one. And I'm no tough guy. But when somebody tries to take away my life, I'll take theirs away first. I can guarantee you that. And if someone tries to take away my dignity, I'll take away theirs first, if I can. I'm going to go down fighting, my friends. I didn't get where I am by being a wuss or a wimp or rolling over to some left-wing pervert, and I'm not going to start today. I'm going to get this man, and I'm going to put him in jail, and when I do, I'm going to publicize his name for you to find out who he is. So when he goes to prison, all of the people in prison who he would like not to know his name will know who he is and what cell he's in. You follow what I'm saying? There are several different realms of society in this country. There's this world, there's the prison world, there's the supernatural world, and God knows maybe other worlds. And all of them have different rules and obligations. When I catch this man and I prosecute him and he goes away for 5 years, I'll put his picture on my website. And then all of the gentlemen who were in prison with him can go and say congratulations for sending homosexual stuff to Michael Savage's workers, and congratulations for putting his address on the internet. Thank you, Ned. We'd like to buy you a birthday cake. That's what's going to happen. John, KNEW, what's on your mind?
Hey, Michael, this is Johnny.
Yes.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you I agree with everything. You pretty much just said what I wanted to say for yourself. And you keep pressing this guy. And, you know, this is serious stuff. And if you ever need any protection, we're out here in the Bay Area. We got your back.
Well, John, I appreciate it, but there's no physical protection I need right now. What I need is somebody who's listening to this show who knows who this individual is to expose him, because it's going to be better for him in the long run, because if he's not turned in 19 minutes, it's out of my hands. Tomorrow, it goes into the hands of the federal government, John, and I thank you for that call. Los Angeles, Larry on KLAA. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I have an idea how you can find this guy.
Go ahead.
Infiltrating the groups from the left. People like this brag about what they do. I'm the guy that called up Michael Savage. You find some kid, dress him up like a lefty. I'm guaranteed.
I don't have to do that. Let me explain, Larry. Let me explain how this works. This fake man, Ned Allen, posted my home address, my office address, blah, 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 on the internet. He has done so through a server. You follow me? You know how that works? The server says that he'll protect the privacy of anybody. The minute I sue the server, the minute I sue that server in Atlanta, Georgia, that server has to divulge the name and address of the man who bought that IP, that address. The minute that happens, we're going to find him and we're going to have him arrested. You follow me, Larry? Listen, internet crimes are a big, big area of police work today. This is not the first time something like this has happened, and we're going to find him. That's all I can say to you. And now I'm going to offer a reward to the friends of Ned Allen. Now I'm going to up the stakes a little bit more because there's only 17 minutes left. I will give $10,000 in cash to anybody who discloses this Ned Allen to me or to the proper authorities, and it leads to the arrest and imprisonment of Ned Allen. You'll get $10,000 from Michael Savage. And moreover, I will give you privacy. I will not divulge your name. Anybody who knows who he is, you just made $10,000. You probably hate his guts anyway. And I don't care if you're gay or straight. I don't care who you are. I will give you that $10,000 if you can prove that you know who this person is. And you can turn it over to the San Francisco Police Department, or you can turn it over to 1-800-449-8255, okay? $10,000. Frederick, Maryland. Leon, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, I'm real sorry about what happened to you. I know that most gay people and liberals were appalled, but I want to tell you that this letter carrier had to see this. They cased their mail. They put it in piles before they deliver it.
Leon, let me explain. There were three postcards of three individual postcards of men with their genitals exposed. One was an S&M scene with a man with his genitals exposed on a postcard. You follow me? This was not in a package. The mailman was complicit in this.
Absolutely complicit, or if he wasn't complicit in it, he deserves to be fired because it's against his...
Absolutely. Policy. He was negligent. If at the very least, he was negligent. I'm going to pursue the Mill Valley Post Office on this in Mill Valley, California. I'm going to do that. Thank you for the call. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. John, go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm John. A letter carrier, 15 years in Milwaukee, and the way mail has been processed for delivery has changed over these 15 years immensely.
Okay. All right, so now tell me, the man didn't see a man's genitals hanging out on a postcard?
Second, Michael, let me just, I can ask you some questions, but let me explain this first. We do not see the mail that we deliver until we're on the doorstep, we're delivering it. I don't know if you're a driver.
All right, okay, I'll take that as word. It's automatically sorted, automatically put in the stack. I get it. You're telling me, though, you don't see a postcard with a man's private parts exposed?
I haven't seen the postcard. Was the address on one side and the offensive material on the other?
Yes, it was.
I'm almost certain he didn't see it. Let me tell you this.
All right, you know what, John? He's not my problem. And I will certainly accept that from a postal carrier, that he's not the problem. The person who sent it is the problem. But I was appalled that a postman would deliver this. And by the way, he did so on three different occasions. I can't believe the U.S. Postal Service is so negligent as to deliver pornography today to human beings who don't want it. I can't believe it.
Did your people tell him about the first offensive delivery?
No. No, it was three in a row. Bing, bang, boom. Three in a row.
Someone that handles the mail regularly, or is it just handled by whoever's in the office when they come in?
I hear what you're saying. So the thing to do is to get him in there and tell him don't deliver these any further. Well, I'm glad he delivered them. Because now the detective is going to have them as evidence. You follow me?
Had they tipped
off, had they tipped the mailman off on the first delivery, he could have told the inspectors immediately that there was a problem.
All right. I hear you. And believe me, I had an uncle who was a postman. I have no vendetta against the U.S. Postal Service here. I know what hard work is. It's not an easy job. And I thank you for that call. 1-800-449-8255. I am the son of an immigrant. And so we understand what hard work is, and we understand that not every letter carrier wants to do this. But something is wrong with this picture, that we live in a country that is so degenerated that, A, there would be a company to print these postcards, B, that letter carriers wouldn't see them. I can't believe that our country has degenerated so rapidly that the U.S. Postal Service doesn't automatically screen out this vile garbage that was started by Larry Flint. Larry Flint started this filth by suing. This is called First Amendment. This is what your ancestors died in previous wars for, so that people could send this garbage through the mail. Do you understand what the left wing has done to the sacred nature of this country? How they've turned your ancestors into jokes and fools? You know what the left really is doing here? They're destroying everything that your ancestors died for. That's what they're doing. You know, yeah, it's touching me personally. I'm really pissed off and I'm fuming. Yeah, I'm fuming. He got to me. But he's going to be sorry he got to me, because I don't stop. I'm a bulldog. Remember, I spent 10 years trying to get something and I finally got it. I will spend the rest of my life and I'm going to find this person. You know, I can be a very lackadaisical guy and I can let things go. I usually let things go, because you're in the talk business. You get all sorts of hate and you get threats and you learn to ignore them. But when that line is crossed and I start in like this, I'm warning him, I will never stop. I'll catch him. And he's going to jail. And his friends, I'm warning you, you'll be held liable for damages if you know who he is and you don't turn him over. And I'm going to now give you a carrot. If you do turn him over, you will not only not be held liable for damages, but I'll give you $10,000 cash. How's that? If your information leads to an arrest and conviction, okay? And that's it. I'm going to stop this at the top of the hour and move on to the stories of the day, but I have to do this. You'll just have to indulge me. I'm sorry. Alan in Indianapolis, go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, big fan of your show. I'm a Cisco certified network engineer, which means basically I work with IP and internet networks, web servers every day. And I've been doing this for almost 15 years now. And I've been involved in about four or five different cases where state and or local authorities came to the places, the ISPs where I work, and demanded to see what they call log files, IP traces of where things are.
Now we're getting somewhere. Now, I want the people to understand that this does happen, and then once they're sued, they do have to divulge it. Isn't that right, sir?
That is exactly right. And web servers, I mean, you can see this even with, I would say, most of your web servers, most of your ISP companies now, even with file sharing. It used to be like an open thing. Napster was real big. They are doing so much port blocking now with child pornography, with the illegal copying. And
that's right. Well, I looked at some of the left-wing and homosexual blogs who have dispersed my name. One of them said that we will not put his home address on, but they gave out the office address and this and that. They try to act like they were above the rest. They're all going to be served with papers in the next few weeks. I can guarantee you they're not going to be very happy campers for playing games with a person's security and his family security. And are you suggesting you can help me with this?
What I would suggest you do, if the web server company was out of Atlanta, Georgia, definitely make sure that you, because web server companies do have, and it's sort of a secret in the industry, web server companies, when they face a problem that there may be some legal things that they may have to deal with, sometimes log files can somehow mysteriously disappear, get deleted.
Yeah, I had that with Craigslist, who did this to me once. They mysteriously lost the address of a cretin in Mill Valley, California, and it may be the same person, but he'll be found. So what in a nutshell, do you want me to hire you as a consultant, or do you want to offer your services? I'll do either one. I'll pay for your services.
I can definitely either help, or I can definitely lead you.
All right, stay on the line. Get this gentleman's name and contact by the email, and I'll contact him, and I will pay him to help me. Believe me, we're going to do this. And when I come back, I'll go back to this privacy theft story, because what's touching Michael Savage today could touch you tomorrow. And I don't expect any help from my friends on the right. I don't expect any help from them. People who have published that Newt Gingrich said that it's going to be a Hillary Obama ticket. even though they know I said it first. I expect no help from my dear friends on the right-wing blogs who I put in business. I don't expect any help from anybody except my own self. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, I've done what I have to do. We haven't disclosed. We haven't found Ned Allen. He has 3 minutes left to disclose himself or be disclosed. We're going to get the federal and state government after him after we do this. But in the next hour, I'm going to do personal stories from childhood. I'm going to go back because I met with a film producer last night in an inexpensive Japanese restaurant to talk about the Michael Savage story. I told you I was thinking about a movie. Well, I take my time, but I met with a producer last night. I'm going to tell you some of the stories that are going to appear in film when it happens. It's going to take a little while, but I want to tell you how we got where we are today. Benjamin Franklin hit the nail on the head when he asked, if men are so wicked with religion, what would they be without it? Now, make no mistake about what I'm saying to you. First, the dogs of hate snap the crosses from off of your necklaces. Then they snap off the crosses from the war memorials of the men and women who died to preserve the freedom of religion. What's next? Maybe these unhappy pagans will decide that the Torah is too exclusionist and outlaw the core of Judaism. Well, I'll tell you what men would be like without religion. They'd be exactly like what we're seeing in the bathhouses of San Francisco. By the way, I'm reading from page 131 of The Enemy Within, which is why you can see why I have so many wonderful friends in this city. A lost and hedonistic people undistracted by a moral compass. A people who routinely engage in high-risk, indiscriminate sexual practices with multiple and often HIV-infected anonymous partners, even when they know such insane behavior is suicidal. A people so confused and so militant, they not only want the freedom to act recklessly. You get the picture? That's who I'm dealing with here. Have a nice break.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is true that Benjamin Franklin hit the nail on the head when he asked, if men are so wicked with religion, what would they be without it? And of course, the answer can be seen in San Francisco, a city that is lost, filled with hedonistic people, undistracted by any moral compass whatsoever, filled with insane and suicidal behavior. But beyond that, they are so militant that they not only want the freedom to act recklessly and commit crimes against themselves, they demand silence from any and all who would dare question the morality or health consequences of any of their activities. If you hold personal convictions about faith, meaning you're religious, these hedonists in San Francisco, in a real-life satyricon, and their RDDB compadres in the courts, believe it's you or them. Your very existence is a threat to their way of life. They've abandoned their 60s credo, which was live and let live. Instead, Hillary and Obama and the left-wing Koss group have twisted it to be we live and your beliefs die. Die to the notion of right and wrong. Die to the notion of good and evil. Die to the notion of the high road and the low road. And that's why today's left-wingers, the anarchists of the soul, have spent the better part of 40 years vilifying, undermining, discrediting, marginalizing, and silencing the voices of faith, particularly the voices of Christianity, who I call the Christophobes of our time. I want to move on right now to something a little more fun than my particular desire to catch this identity theft, privacy theft person. He has not yet disclosed himself. I gave him 1 hour to do so. Not only did he not disclose himself, his friends have not come forward for the reward, but that may happen over the next few days. And if it does, I will notify you on this program. I want to tell some stories right now, some childhood stories, because I know many of you love my storytelling and care less about politics. And I get continuously get people saying, well, look, tell us about your father or your mother or your cooking or this and that when you were a kid. So let me tell you what happened. Last night, I went to dinner with a friend who was a very successful film producer. In fact, he last year had the largest grossing film of 2006. Just so you understand, he's not an unknown. He's quite a known quantity. He's also a very, very big conservative and has been all of his life. And he's certifiably my friend. So I brought him a copy of an outline and a chapter of an autobiography that I started to write 6 months ago and I put on a shelf. And I said, look, this is the basis for the movie that we're going to do. And I said, I've got tons of archival footage in video of the events we put on, the Saving the Real Private Ryan, Name Him and Shame Him, Try Him and Fry Him. I got some amazing video. His eyes lit up. He said, that's gold. I said, I also have some great Super 8 footage from the years in the Fiji Islands when the kids were babies with the Fijian people and the collecting the plants. He said, that's unbelievably popular today. I said, it's a straight-out documentary. I said, if Michael Moorhead can make fraudulent movies about healthcare in Cuba when we all know it was in a feed hospital for Fidel Castro and his murderous hordes, and the left will go to see that, well, I'm sure that the center-right people, of whom there are quite a few in this country, would like to see the Michael Savage story in the movie theaters. They want to see it on the screen. And it won't gross as much as The Passion of Jesus, I can guarantee you, but it will probably be in the $50 to $100 million range in the overall gross. So you say, well, how are you going to get a movie like that distributed? The answer is simply, people in the movies, although they hate conservatism, do not control all of the distribution in the movie business. In fact, there are some conservatives who own quite a few screens. And all I need are 500 theaters to do this in. So to make a long story short, we're going ahead with it, okay? So now let's get down to what I'm going to do with you today, if you want, on the show, which is stories. So what's going to be in the movie? What are the opening scenes? What are some of the scenes? Well, I have a concept, which I'm not going to give away for the movie itself, of how to do this, where I will play me now telling the story of my life with flashbacks. Basically, that's it, because I want to be in it and tell the story. That's what you want to see is me now. But there's a me then, and there's a me now and a me then. So I want to talk about some of the childhood stories. Those will be staged. There we're going to get actors for some of those scenes. So, for example, if I said I want to stage Fat Al's Tuna, what if I want to open the movie with Dead Man's Pants? Now, many of you are new listeners and you like my politics, but you don't know what these stories are about. I'll tell you Dead Man's Pants right now, and then I'll take your requests for stories, your favorite stories from this program at 1-800-449-8255. I'm not in a great mood, so my ability to tell a story may not be as good as it is some days, okay? So bear with me. But let me tell you Dead Man's Pants. Oh, God, I wish I had the narrative with me, which I wrote so much better than I could. It may be right. It's actually, most of these stories are in The Enemy Within. At least a good portion of them are in here. Drew, see if you can find Dead Man's Pants. I don't know if I can find it in here because I'd rather read it right now than tell it. I'll try to tell it to the best. Wait, it opens with Harry speeding and almost killing us in the cab. Here it is. Got it. I got it. Dead Man's Pants, page 7 of The Enemy Within. So settle back for a summer story because here it comes. Okay. Growing up in the Bronx as I did, the man-child in the promised land, I didn't have many of the luxuries most kids with their hat on backwards take for granted today. You see, my father was a first-generation immigrant. He worked his fingers to the bone. We simply didn't have the money to afford more than the basics. So, as you might expect, I cherished and took care of the things I had. As a kid, I'd line up my shoes under my bed at night neat, like in the military. I made sure they were polished, too. I'm sure some shrink today would say I suffered from ADD, or some obsessive compulsive disorder, and should have been put on an immediate regimen of Ritalin. I wonder what a shrink would say about the fact that through most of my youth I wore secondhand pants from dead men. I'm absolutely serious about this. Many of the pants I wore as a preteen came off of stiffs and were cut down to fit me. Don't get me wrong, my father was a good man. He ran a small antique store with mostly 19th century stuff in it. On the side, at least in the beginning, he sold used goods as well. A man's got to do what a man's got to do to make ends meet, right? Occasionally, Dad would go to an auction where a man had died and buy the entire estate, the clocks, the dishes, the mirrors, whatever the man had, the pants, the shirts, the whole deal. You get the picture? Well, back at the store at night, as he was sorting through the stuff for resale, My father would take a closer look at a certain suit or two. Once he got a hot shaft remarks from a dead man, now what's he going to do with it? Toss it in the garbage like they do today? In those days, it wasn't in him to throw out a good worsted fabric. Instead, he brought home the pants to me. I remember my father showing them to me, like the head tailor at Nordstrom's department store. He'd say, "Now, Michael, get a good look at the fabric. I wanted to vomit. I got a migraine because I knew what was coming. Take a look at the quality of this fabric. He's working me like a salesman. He's unrolling the pants on the bed. I can see it to this day. He unrolls them like he's selling me a bolt of hand-woven cloth. He would say, "You can't get fabric like this anymore. I wanted to say, "Of course not, Dad. They only sell stuff like that for men who died. You know, it was like special clothing for the undertaker." Even if I had said something, that wouldn't have changed anything. He'd go downtown, and the pants would come back fit for me, you know, without the legs taken in properly. They ended up like baggy, like a pair of Charlie Chaplin's pants. Even if they had fit me properly, there was something repugnant about the whole idea. The whole idea. Now, here's the connection. Today, almost daily, the leftists from both political parties come into our homes peddling some new entitlement program or some new right or new educational initiative. As they roll out their one-world socialist ideas that went out of fashion decades ago, we feel nauseated. Why? These posers are offering us nothing more than dead man's pants. Ideas that history has demonstrated don't work. And I'll pause right there. And that is a story that I wanted to begin with. And that should be in the movie. That might be an opening scene. Just a state. I wouldn't be in that one. We get an actor, a kid with dark eyes and, you know, tussled brown hair and the dad and the store. That could be filmed for, you know, not a fortune. I'm going to use unknown actors for this movie, by the way. I don't need a famous actor. I have an idea for a screenwriter who I'm going to approach, who I'm going to ask to do it for, and he'll have to do it under a pseudonym, and his name won't be Ned Allen. He's a famous screenwriter who might be conservative enough to write this, but he could never do it under his real name because he'd be boycotted by the Prius drivers at the Creative Artists Agency, I think. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to your favorite radio talk show, The Savage Nation. I'm telling stories. They're really somewhat apolitical in a way, but I tie them to politics at a certain point, if you wish. If not, I'll just tell the story and you can draw your own conclusions as to how I became who I am. And, you know, no man is an island. We are a product of our genetic inheritance and a product of our upbringing and a product of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune and a product of the good things that happen to us as well. That's what makes us. Make no mistake about it. We are all the product of all of those things. So when I tell you these stories, some of them will wind up in the movie, and I hope the movie does get done. There's no reason it shouldn't. It's a matter of time and energy and money. And so, you know, and to get enough people involved, good people in this production, it will be in a theater in your lifetime, hopefully before the election. Because, frankly, if I can get this movie out just before the election, and the emphasis is on borders, language, and culture, as through the struggles of one man and what he overcame and how the social engineers of the left almost destroyed him, I think it will swing a lot of voters in the direction of saving this country and moving them in the right direction. And that's really what I have in mind. The timing is going to be everything here. So what we're talking about right now is what scenes you remember, what stories I've told over the years that you like, that you would like to see filmed and come to life, I'll tell you the story. So, WOR New York City, Ramon, go ahead, please. Welcome.
Hi, Michael, two great stories come to mind because they resonate with me. The first one is when you're talking about getting stuck in the basement polishing the statues with Brasso, and you were able to explain by your father how the statues were judged by the quality of the fingers. Remember that statue by you getting stuck having to polish them in the basement?
Yes, but one correction. We didn't use Brasso. I used cyanide solution, which is a whole story unto itself. I mean, it's toxic. It would not be permitted today, but that's a separate issue. Yes, and my dad taught me that you can judge the quality of the artist by the fingers and by the toes, and he was 1,000% correct, wasn't he?
Great story, absolutely. The second one is driving to work with your dad, and he wouldn't let you listen to the radio, and my dad did the same thing to me. He was
I was sitting grimly in this car in those cold, horrible days going down to the store on Saturday when all I did was want to hang out with my friends, And all I would try to do is, like, you're sitting in this car, the air was so thick you could cut it because the poor guy had worries, you know, worries about the whatever. And he wanted the silence of the car. Meanwhile, the sun dummy is sitting there. And I wanted a little rock and roll music. I'd hit the button. He'd say, no music. Is that what you got?
He cut my hand off, too. He's like, be quiet. We're going to work. And I was like, we're not up.
That's right. In other words, when you're going to work, there's no time for levity on the way to the pyramid. If you're going to pull rocks up that pyramid, you can't have any fun on the way to the building site. Those old guys really had a way about them, didn't they? They brought joy wherever they went, Ramon.
But they gave us our future.
Well, that's right. In many ways, they did. And then they left their scars along the way, too. But there's no complaining about it. We are what we are. What would we have been had we not had this harshness? We would have been like a ball of like a vanilla ice cream in a hot day.
Mush. We'd be mush.
Mush. Mush. Mush. Mush. Okay. Honolulu, Mike, KHBZ. I got to get out there someday and do KHBZ out of Honolulu. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
One of my favorite stories, Dr. Savage, is your dog dying when you're younger. Not because I find it funny, but just because we've all gone through that, and that's just the reality of life. You waking up in the morning, and there's the dog stiff. Rigor mortis is set in, poking it with a broom. They call the sanitation department to come up to your apartment. I mean, somebody that's been a part of your life, as a member of the family, and here's, you wake up one morning, here's reality slapping you in the face. I mean,
yeah, and they threw him in. No, it was horrible. I don't know that they do that anymore today. He was a chow that must have weighed, he was part chow, weighed about 40 pounds. Now, this is the dog who had bit me when I was a kid. So I loved him because I was a kid and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I still was afraid of him because this dog was crazy. You know, he dug into my foot down to the bone. You could see the white showing when he bit me. I never trusted him after that. Nevertheless, when he died, it was a shock. My mother was crying. She was a sentimental, warm woman. And I said, what's the matter, Mom? What's the matter? And she said, well, the dog is laying there. She was frightened, you know. And I went over and we touched it, and it was stiff as stiff. So she called the garbage department in San Francisco, the New York Sanitation Department. They, two guys come in the brown uniforms, grim-faced. And they just nod. They took it out by the legs. And then bingo, in the back of the truck with the grinder going. I mean, that was horrible. They don't do that today, do they?
No, but that's life. I mean, we desensitize.
Well, we don't throw a dog even in a garbage truck anymore today, do we?
No, I don't think so.
No, but it was. I tell you, no, it's a symbol of of the kind of times in this country, in a way. It was like grim. It was like Grimm's fairy tales in those days. And I'm not talking about 1,000 years ago here. You know, it's funny. I went on Google Earth the other day. And you know that I was the first to warn about the dangers of Google Earth, blah, blah, blah. So I went on the other day anyway, and I looked up all the addresses I had lived at in my life. I zoomed into the house I grew up in Queens. You know, it's astounding. I call it Google Eye. When I go on Google Earth for more than like a certain period of time, I get Google Eye. You can write that down. I created it for you so it could be stolen tomorrow by Newt Gingrich. Anyway, I got Google Eye. What's shocking about it is it almost takes away all the mystery of heaven and earth. You're sitting up in heaven and look down and zoom down to New York or wherever you grew up and focus in on your little house. And boom, there you are in the heart of 18 million souls in the greater metro area. And there's you go in and there's your little house, the exact street. I couldn't believe it. It's still there. And the porch my father built in the back of this attached little house is seen on Google Earth. I said, Dad's porch that he built with his own hands. I'll never forget when he built that. I was so impressed that he could build this. He had an Italian friend who was in the construction business who poured the foundation for him. And they came over. I don't know how they did it with Sacrete in those days. It wasn't even a truck. But they put out the wood platform. Now, I thought it was like a miracle to me. Then they poured in the cement. Then they put in the – before they put the cement, I thought that they were geniuses, that they could figure out that in advance of pouring the cement, they were so smart, they had to put the screws in that were going to support the 2x4s that were the foundation. I said, man, my father is smart that he knew to do that. You know, you got to understand, kids don't see the world the way we do. They see the world as it is. Your father was smart if he could do a thing like that. So he lay, and it's still there. 1,000 years later, the porch is still there in the back of this house on Google Earth. That's why I got Google Eye. When I come back, one-armed Frank.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come into view.
It is the Savage Nation. If you're expecting chances Democrats bad, Republicans good, you may as well tune into the guy with the voice of Groucho Marx, who thinks that everybody who calls him is a great American, because I'm going to tell stories right now. And, you know, please try to do this for me. It's amazing. I go to people and say, oh, tell me the story about this or that, because they heard it, they loved it, or they went through it themselves, and it brings back a different time in America, whatever. But try to envision whether you think this story should be brought to life in a movie. In let's say I'm doing my life story, and what point that would it be? I can't tell all these stories in a movie. You know, what would be the point? And it's going to end up with me sitting somewhere, or actually me on the radio in front of a microphone doing a live show like now, and then flashing back to telling these stories of how I got here. I don't want to give away the whole story of how I'm going to do it. I think you're going to love this movie when it's out. It's a long way from being made. But the baby, let's put it to you this way. The baby is a glint in its father's eye. That's what it is right now. That's all this baby is a glint in its father's eye. But it's not going to be aborted, I tell you right now. This baby's not going to be aborted once it's conceived. WOR in New York, Karen, you're on the Savage Nation. Which story do you want to hear?
I have to hear it. The one when you went into the shoe store and you placed your foot in the x-ray machine. That story.
Okay, wait. Now, I have a dentist who said to me he did it too. Why do you remember? Why is that story good fun for you?
I don't know. It's hysterical. The way you tell it, you can picture it. It's wonderful. And
well, what's shocking is that I'm not dead from it because, you know, today the whack jobs would have you believe everything is a liability and you're going to die from it. When I was a kid, old Mike Savage went to a shoe store. I don't know the name of the brand. It was Tom McCann or something like that, if I remember correctly, or Buster Brown. I don't remember. They had machines in the side or in the back. They were made of wood. To this day, I can remember the wood on the side. You put your eye on the, you put your feet in it, your foot, and then you looked in from the top like in a view thing, a viewing area, and an x-ray, x-rayed your foot, and you could see your bones of your foot inside the shoe. You hear? So if my sister was having shoes put on, which must have gone on for 30 minutes, you press the button to get an x-ray, right? Or a fluoroscope. Actually, it was a live x-ray. I would press the button over and over and over to see the it was like, you know, Halloween come alive for me, Karen. So I would press it over and over and over to see my foot inside that fluoroscope machine. Now, by today's analysis, shouldn't I be dead from cancer of the foot?
You should be dead. You have another good story.
Wait a minute. How about secondhand smoke, the next bugaboo? I grew up, my father smoked, may rest in peace, 2-3 packs a day of Philip Morris, unfiltered. And at night, he'd come home and eat dinner and smoke until he went to sleep. I'd lay on his lap, and I'd listen to the radio in his lap, and I had secondhand smoke. How come I'm not dead from that?
Michael, you also went to a doctor, Dr. K, and he used to blow your ears out. I went to that guy, too.
I hope to God he's in heaven having his ears blown out by one of the henchmen up there in the world below. For the rest of eternity, what he did to me. You had that too? Where they put the tube in your ear and held your head down and stuff came out of your ear?
Oh, it was terrible. He was a rat bum.
Oh, that doctor? That, you know him. Oh, so you know who I'm talking about. Does he have descendants who listen to this show?
Nah, he's gone.
He's gone. I know he didn't go to the place up above. I know he went to the one below. Thank you. What a rotten doctor this guy was. Don't get me started with the ear story. I'll get sick and... I can't deal with it. I had bad Japanese food last night on top of it all. One time I go, it's good in Japantown. I go back, it was like everything went. You ever go to like, you go on an off night, everything's nice. You feel like you're in Tokyo. Everything was perfect. It was an inexpensive one. It's across from Benihana, so it's not expensive. I don't like Benihana because I don't like guys who talk to me while they're cooking and throwing things in the air. I don't want to eat anything they throw in the air. And I don't need a performance. I want the food, so I don't go there. Across the street from them, and across the alley there in Japantown, there's a Japanese restaurant that's inexpensive, and the food is authentic, and it's mainly Japanese people. First time I went, the sashimi was good, the raw fish. I didn't say sushi, I said sashimi. And it was quiet. I felt like I was in like a prefecture of Japan, or like a province. It wasn't like Tokyo, okay? I go there last night figuring, where am I going to go and meet my producer friend where I can have a quiet talk about the movie where there's going to be less noise than anywhere? So I run through the Italian. This, I don't want anyone talking to me and asking me how it is. They're nice guys. So I go in. No one knows anybody. They don't know from nothing. Boom, give me the booth. My luck is God is my witness. They wheel in a baby, and they were off the boat from Japan. They were tourists. You figure, all right, so first I see the baby, my heart dropped. They sat him right next to my booth. That was number one. My heart skipped a beat. Now I said, so I adjusted in my head. I said, oh, but they're Japanese. They usually keep their children quiet. They're not like in America where the children are allowed to scream. They're not liberals from Mill Valley with a 50-year-old father without hair, with a 30-year-old wife where the baby could virtually urinate on the table, and they think it's cute. So I figured, well, they're this thing. They're going to. The baby didn't shut up for an hour. It screamed and screamed and screamed and screamed till the mother started hitting it. It was an infant. She was hitting the infant. I said, no wonder the baby's screaming. The mother's a monster. And the father was sitting there looking in the sky, and she was slapping the child's hand. You know, in this country, she'd be arrested for child abuse. I didn't know that was part of the Japanese culture, hitting a baby. I had never seen that before. So what am I getting? It was horrible. And the food, I came home with an indigestion. My God, did I need... Whew, this was a bad one. You can't win anymore. That's all. 1-800-449. That's why I stay home. You cook the spaghetti. You put a little oil. You put a little garlic on it yourself. You grind the Parmesan cheese. And you drink what you're going to drink. And you watch a show. What is better than that? Nothing. Well, who has the time for it? I do. KNEW, San Francisco. Teresa, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Savage, I love you, love you, love you, love you. I have an idea for your opening scene. You just said it. You, your wife beater shirt, rummaging through the refrigerator for the noodles, getting the pan hot, and preparing your spaghetti like an intro to where you're at now.
That would be funny. I don't know that that would be a good intro, but you're incorrect. I don't wear wife beater shirts. You think I'm like a guy who wears wife beater shirts?
Well, you're undershirt, so you know, the white shirt.
All right, I wear undershirts. That's not the wife beater shirt has no arms on it.
Oh, well, I'm confused. I don't think you're in one of those. Though you know, the white hanes.
All right, undershirt is okay. Undershirt is okay. It's not a bad. I don't think I'd have the nerve to wear an undershirt in a movie about my life. My God, who has the nerve to do that? But it's not a bad idea for a scene. The cooking scene would probably not be a bad one, you know. But I tell you, you know, what's coming to my mind is a stage scene of mom cooking in her little kitchen and me tasting from the pots. One of those, you know. Did you get any of my books? Did you ever read The Enemy Within, an older book of mine, Teresa? Because I have pictures of my family in there. Did you see that one of me and my mother over her little stove?
It was awesome, that little kitchen. I remember.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, with mom in her kitchen, Queens, New York, 1980s. And I'll tell you what's amazing about it. Look at her. She's like alive. I look at her right now. Here was a kitchen that you had to walk sideways to walk through this kitchen. It was a pantry kitchen, right? And the stove was electric, four electric burners on the top, one refrigerator, not two, you know, no extra refrigerator for the drinks. And the sink, you had to turn. If she was cooking, you had to walk in, let's say she was facing the stove, right? It's your mother. You had to walk in where your front was facing the sink. Otherwise, you know what I'm saying? Because you touched, your body touched. That's how small it was. Now, what this woman, God bless it, could turn out on those four burners, a guy who goes to the California Academy of Cuisine, whatever they call it, CAA, California Academy of Art, I don't know. They teach him how to cook. They come out. They dice. They cook. They shrine. You could puke from the food that they eat. You ever see these poor guys?
Oh, yeah.
Till they get through chopping a scallion. My mother would throw him out of the kitchen and say, look, Buster, get out of here. Let me make a meal already till you finish with the dicing and the cooking. But she turned out meals. I don't know how she did it. She always had like three or four different full meals for an army prepared in the back of the refrigerator. Drew, come in here. I hit a wrong button and I've lost my call screen. 1-800-449-8255. Visit me online at michaelsavage.com. You know, I should post this picture. I should scan it to my mom. Do we have that to get up? I can't get my assistant here right now. Yeah, there's Dad and Tippy the Chow, Springland, New York, 1953. The dog that I just said, look at the size of the head on that dog. My God, like a lion head. I'm lucky he didn't take the foot off. Wow, what a foot on him. What a mouth, what a head on him. And there's the softer side, Snowy the Angel with fur, my Sheltie, who's now ashes in a box on the table. That's nice. That's nice. There she was alive, warm, smiling, eyes. Sheltie, love, happiness, now in the box, the ashes. Now I have the other one to play with, Teddy, one day ashes. That's nice. That's the game. That's the setup for all of us. And some of us know how to live with it because we believe in the next world and we believe that God's going to reward us. Those of you who don't believe in the next world, make your life a hell on this earth and a life for hell everybody around you because that's where you live. That was a punchline. It went nowhere. I can't call up any callers. I had a button here. I hit something here. I can't do anything. All right, pull up anybody. I can't hit anything. So put anybody up. Next spot. Next caller, please. Go ahead. Savage Nation. Who's calling, please? Nobody. Do I have a caller or not? Put him up, I said. Not like zero. Like zero. I'll try one here. Line 8, you're on the Savage Nation. Hello? Nothing. So I killed my call screener. I can't even get a caller up. Okay, well, I guess that I need an engineer here, and there is no engineer here, so I can take a break and play around with the equipment that Telos normally works. My assistant is not, you can't call him and tell him to come in. He's in the other room smoking during the break like the father and giving me an allergy when he comes back. Chris, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor. I just wanted to say that, oh, man, when you tell your stories, especially about the one where all the women in the kitchen gossiping, I always think of that reminds me of like kind of my youth too. Like everything was okay, you know, when you could hear him in the background, you're a kid. It's almost like Brighton Beach Memoirs. You can like, it's like you can feel like the family, even though they beat you up emotionally, but you just feel like everything's okay in the world when they're back there gossiping and you can hear them. I love that story that you told about that.
But which you like, the women in the kitchen better or the men on the couch with the pants open gagging? No, look, that's the way people fed in those days. Today, I don't think they do unless they're ethnic groups who eat like that still. They still do that. I mean, I miss it in a way. If you left my mother's house and you were hungry, it was considered a sign of that she mistreated you. Do you understand how they thought?
Oh, absolutely. Like you always said that nobody made calls saying, I'm going to come by. We need to make
no
time.
Nobody called and said. They came over and knocked on the door. Almost every night, relatives or friends would drop into my parents. Today, in the world I live in, you never see anybody. You have to make 80 appointments with people. And by the time it comes around, you don't want to see them anyway. You know, it's like you went through it in your head 100 times.
I know it. I love it.
No, it's true. I like that spontaneous. But the neighborhoods were different. They all live together. And I have a friend. Well, he's dead now. He just recently passed away. But his parents, had come over from the old country. The father was a butcher. And they moved into an area in Queens, not near us. They didn't know our family at all. But when they left Queens to move to Florida, which they all did, it was like the elephant's burial grounds, not only did they move to this area of Florida, their entire neighborhood moved at the same time within a few months of each other to the same exact retirement area or community in Florida. They transported their entire neighborhood. I said, you know something? Those people had a much richer life than I do. I got to tell you that right now. I envied that. None of them had real money. No one had any in the fame. I really envy what they had. They had a unity and a community that you can't even match today. And I'll tell you something more interesting. Jamaican communities of black Jamaicans in Queens, New York, you know, tend to live together like many ethnic groups do. Do you know that when they retired, I read this a couple of years ago in a paper, when the Jamaicans, the people from Jamaica, came to Queens and lived there, worked their lives, bought that, blah, 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 the kids grew up, they moved their entire community at the same time to the same retirement area, and I think it was also wherever it was in Florida, but as a community. And this goes on with many ethnic groups. They had a lot going for them. They had a community that the left likes to talk about that they could never find, and frankly, that I talk about, and I do find on this show. You got to understand something. Because I live in the most horrible community on planet Earth, the sickest people on the planet live in San Francisco. Bar none, there's no sicker community than San Francisco. I would wager a bet that there's no more morally debased city in the entire world than this city. You name the country, and I'll tell you there's no city worse than this. And I'll prove it to you. Last Friday, this city took a transsexual who owns a porno shop and made her, him, whatever, the police commissioner. This was the final straw for me and many people I know who they said they're getting out of the city as soon as they can. They're selling their houses as soon as they can and they're leaving. It is the most debased city on the planet. And I got to tell you something. One of the reasons I created this radio show was because I could never find a community to live in. where I felt that I could find like-minded people. I got to tell you that right now. You say, well, what motivates a man to create a thing in his own mind, a radio show, and go on the air every day and people call and listen, millions of people, because we live in an atomized world where you probably feel disconnected from a community of like-minded people where you can talk with and there's a, and you wish to God that, let's say, don't you wish that you could come, like go out tonight, let's say after work, come home and go out of your house and go to a meeting hall where I would be and people like the ones you hear calling the show would be, sit around, talk a little bit. Of course you do, but you can't find that in this world. So you come to talk radio for the community you can't find in the world in which we all live. And that's what I'm getting at, is that I could not find that world. I can't find that world. So I created that virtual world through this radio show. Do you understand where I'm coming from? I'll be right back. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. If you're enjoying the program, I thank you for enjoying the program. Just a reminder, at this time, we only have 327 copies of the Freedom of Speech DVD award remaining for sale. And let me just quickly check for you. Only 438 copies of Healing Children Naturally remain for you right now. And only 901 copies of Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's remain right now on my website. And I ask, is it worth $19 to save your brain? Is it worth $19 to see if you can help your children's health? Is it worth $19 to see what freedom of speech really is, the kind of freedom of speech that C-SPAN will not run? They will only run left-wing drivel on C-SPAN. I have great stories up there as well. Here's one. Guantanamo cell is better than freedom, says inmate fighting against release. You believe this? I believe it. The left, who is telling you they're being mistreated at Guantanamo, are so crazy and so anti-American and so want us to lose this war and so want the Islamo-fascists to see victory. But the guys in the cells in Guantanamo who are being released, many of them are going right back to the battlefield to kill some of your sons. You don't know that either because the jerks who run the newspapers won't tell you that. It's a fact of reality. And now one of those who is about to be released from Guantanamo, an inmate, is saying, I want to stay here. It's better than going back to where I came from. Cannabis joint is harmful as smoking 5 cigarettes. New study, a single joint damages the lungs as much as smoking up to 5 cigarettes at once. And I've told you this. I told you this 2 years ago. I try to warn you that marijuana is more carcinogenic than tobacco. I try to warn you that medical marijuana is a ruse by those who not only want to destroy your mind, but turn you into a victim of the healthcare system. You don't believe me, many of you. You don't understand how much knowledge I really have and how much I'm trying to help you from being manipulated. You continue to hate when, in fact, you're only hating yourself. So let's go back to stories. Stories. Let's see. WOR New York, Jerry, quickly, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Loved your stories about the Lower East Side, your father's store. I can really relate to it because my father also had a business. Probably, I think, behind yours. Yours was on Ludlow Street?
Yes.
Oh, I remember.
What did your father have? What kind of store?
We had the Schmatas there.
He sold clothing on which street?
On Orchard between Stanton and Houston.
So oh, my God. So you have the same exact mercantile background.
Yeah, exactly. Also, we lived up in the Bronx, and we had the same commute with the radio and all that, parked in the municipal lot.
When you went to work with your father, he also didn't let you listen to the radio?
Well, actually, once in a while, he broke down and put on 1010 Winds.
So what story comes to mind, Jerry?
Any of your stories? You mean your stories?
Well, I'm dying to hear your stories now. Did you know Nyberg's Funeral Parlor where I saw my first stiff?
Do you remember Louis Abelafia?
Yes, of course. He put himself on in a theater in the East Village as some new messiah. Is he still living?
I don't think so. He was right across the street from my father's place.
Unbelievable. I knew a lot of those characters from the Lower East Side pretended to be savants in the 1960s during the hippie age. They were on stage. You know what they are today? Supervisors in San Francisco.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Yeah, Tony, there is no heart in San Francisco. It's a soulless, ghoulish place that looks pretty on the outside like a prostitute. Last Friday, we learned that they took a post-op transvestite who has a sex store and made the creature the head of the police commission. That's San Francisco today. Of course, that song could be dedicated to this Dr. Hutan Ruzrock, age 33, who was charged yesterday with prescribing overdoses of medication to speed up the death of a man at a San Luis Obispo hospital to harvest his organs. God. Now, that leads me to the other soulless ghouls who I'm about to name. The House voted just today to tighten ethics rules. And it was an overwhelming majority of congressmen who voted to prohibit lobbyists from giving gifts, to require lobbyists to disclose payments they make to presidential libraries and such. But listen to this. It would also deny retirement benefits to members of Congress who were convicted of bribery, perjury, or similar crimes. It's a great law, and I'm proud to tell you that it passed by an overwhelming majority. But you have to ask yourself, who did not like this bill? Which congressman voted against this bill? Well, Jack Murtha, the very same great hero, Jack Murtha, who called our Marines Nazis, who said that they killed men in the Haditha when they didn't kill any men. The same Jack Murtha whose brother is a major league lobbyist who does business with the Defense Department. Only eight voted against it. Abercrombie, Hawaii, Barton, Texas, Boyd, Florida, Clay, Cleaver, Flake, Murtha, and Tana said no to this bill. Everyone else said yes, with the exception of 13 who did not vote. We will not read the names of those who didn't vote. I don't know why they wouldn't vote for this. But the important point is the no's. The final vote results for roll call 763 on this bill. And it's just amazing to me that you don't see the corruption in the names of those men who said no to the House ethics bill. It's a stricter standard than ever. Stricter standards than ever. Stricter standards than ever. Abercrombie, no. Murtha, no. Barton, no. Boyd, no. Clay, no. Cleaver, no. Flake, no. Tanner, no. That's all you got to know. All you got to know are the no's. And now we move on to the stories that I've been telling you on the Savage Nation. Now, I guess there's one I could open the movie with, the Life movie. It's a sad story. It's the Oxygen 10 story. I don't know that I'm in the mood to tell it. It's kind of a little hard. It's the summertime. You wouldn't know it here in San Francisco. We got a southeaster blowing, man. I got white caps. I got wind. I love it. I absolutely love this weather this time of year. It's exactly why Mark Twain said he never spent the colder winter than the summer in San Francisco. It's one of the reasons I originally moved here was because of the cold weather in the summer, particularly in downtown San Francisco. But anyway, it's gorgeous to see the white caps on the water and whatnot. But it was a hot summer. It was a hot summer's day, maybe July. And no, I'm not telling this story. I can't do it. I can't do this story. It's too close to me, and I'm not in the mood today. I'm not strong enough for it today. You have to be strong enough to create a barrier between you and your painting, okay? In order to paint the story, I'm going to fall into the canvas if I start telling that one, so I'm not doing it. So what other stories would you like to see come to life in film? We've done The Foot X-Ray Machine. We've done Mom Cooking. We did Philip Morris, Dad on a Couch. Did I ever tell you about The Nun's Trunk? Now, many of you have heard The Nun's Trunk story, but many of you didn't. I'll tell you the story, because it's a wild and true story that has tragedy and some comedy. Now, Dad was a secondhand dealer and an antique dealer. They call it antiques then. I wouldn't call them antiquities of the high order, but some of them were beautiful pieces, so I learned a little bit about quality. I could tell the difference between Doré bronze and white metal. I could tell the difference between a schlock artist and a real artist. I could tell the difference between a velvet painter, you know, things like that. If you're around art, you eventually learn what art is and what an artist is and how hard it is to really do a proper sculpting and a proper painting, particularly if you're a kid when your eyes are very sharp and you have nothing but hours on your hand while you're cleaning things to stare at various art objects. You eventually learn which piece is good and which piece is bad, particularly if you have a sense of a differential in your own mind. But one of the things Dad did in the early days in his business was buy trunks at auction. They were called subway auctions. They don't have them anymore. What that meant was if people left valises or trunks or suitcases on the subway, they were taken to a warehouse, and a couple of times a year they would have what's called a subway auction. And the men like my father, who were poor merchants, would go, and they would bid on the suitcase based on what the suitcase's quality was. They would bid $3 to $8 to $10. They didn't know what was going to be in there. But naturally, if it was a better suitcase, they figured they might find something of quality. So they took a chance. It was in those days they didn't open them. In other words, well, you wouldn't auction something off in a suitcase if you knew what was in it. And they didn't go through them. So they would buy at auction trunks and suitcases that were abandoned on the subway, God knows for what reason. And the fun was coming back into the marketplace late at night with a truck full of these suitcases and valises that were unopened. And it was like a giant thrill for a kid to be there as the guys tore open the suitcases and started finding, hey, look what, you know, one guy, I look what's in here, some silver plated this. Oh, look what I found. Look at this. It's a gold watch. So while one of these auctions, they're opening it up, and they can tell, you know, you don't dump it all out on the floor. You take it out piece by piece. You don't know what you're going to break if you throw it over. They didn't have any respect for it necessarily. They're afraid of breaking something. So they're opening a trunk. It was a steamer trunk. In those days, there were steamer trunks. People traveled on ships in steamer trunks. And this one apparently belonged to a nun. How did they know it belonged to a nun? Simple. It had nun's habits in it. So naturally now, therefore, it had some religious context, and the men treated it with a little more distance and a little more respect. They figured maybe they'd find a religious object, and they didn't want to violate any religion by dropping something. So they're going very slowly and pulling the things out little by little, and this is nothing of real value. You see her pictures before she was a nun, a regular girl. Then God knows what happened in her life that made her heart broken, and she went to a nunnery, and she is in the habit. Then you see letters from the mother that dwindle out, and there's no letters. And then you can't believe what you can find in the stories that I would see as a kid. So they get to the bottom, and there's some cloth wrapped around something, like what you'd call Muslim. I don't mean the religion, Muslim, you know, like Muslim cloth, like cheesecloth in essence. And the cheesecloth was wrapped around an object, and a lot of it. So they started to unwrap it. They're unwrapping and unwrapping like a spool, unwrapping, and on the bottom of the spool of the nun's trunk was an embryo. Apparently, this girl had become pregnant. She did not want to, she became pregnant. She probably had an abortion, is what I'm saying. It so broke her heart. She felt that she had killed something that she took the fetus, wrapped it up in this cloth, put it in the trunk, and that was her secret. The story of a fetus in a nun's trunk, it's exactly what I saw as a kid. There are others. There are others. I spend hours down there, as I told you, cleaning down in the dark, horrible Dickens basement, unheated in the winter, unrefrigerated in the summer, and use the cyanide solution to clean the patina off bronzes. So I would get bored to death, and in between cleaning sometimes, there were these huge wine barrels that they used for waste, not like wet waste, but the stuff that they take out of the trunks and they didn't want, they'd throw in there. You know, the dry waste, and in these huge wine barrels. And I remember you could smell the wine, how strong it was, the barrels, the big kegs. I'm talking big. They were as big as me with hoops around them, and they smelled of the wine, and they smelled of the wood. I could smell it to this day. So I'm down there, and I was a kid who was always curious. I would start going through the throwaway stuff because I found it very interesting. What was in the barrel? You'd find pictures, little black and white pictures or manuscripts. I swear to God, I saw compositions, paintings. You don't know what people – see, these guys threw them out. To them, there was no value inherent in a man's life. All that was of value was what was to them what he could sell in the market. But to me as a kid, I saw the value in the man's life story. So I'm digging through the thing, and I would get hung up on a guy's pictures. And there it was again, a whole life story thrown in a barrel. Here he was in the streets of New York, average guy, suit and this and that. Then you see him on the ship waving goodbye. Then he's in Paris somewhere or in London, I don't know where. And then suddenly he doesn't look so hot. And then at the end of it, it peters out. He looks like a bum somewhere. I don't know, the last picture taken, he's like a bum. And mixed in with that are some music compositions that this guy tried to write and sell and went nowhere. Now, whether he committed suicide, I can't tell you. All I know is that his whole life to me was seen in those black and white photos and his music compositions and some letters and this and that. So I always had an eye for the pathos of human existence and for the tragicomedy, which is why when I was a little boy, my favorite gift given to me by mom was a pair of thespian cufflinks where one was smiling and one was frowning. And very often in school, I would sit there bored out of my gourd, and I would stare at the happy face on my right cufflink of the happy face, and on the left arm, on left sleeve, there was the sad face. And then when the class got so boring, I thought I would tear the hair out of my arm, I would take the left cufflink and put it on my right sleeve and put the right cufflink on my left sleeve, which today, of course, they would call obsessive compulsive disorder with prejudice. And they put me on 75 drugs and turned me into an accountant. But luckily, I grew up when they didn't do that to people with an imagination and a soul. That's right, soul. I'll be right back. Savage.
A white sport coat and a pink carnation. I'm all dressed
up. It is July in the Savage Nation, almost August, if you can believe it. Half the summer's shot already. I haven't had a vacation yet. Who needs it? But, you know, you want people go on vacation, and you need a vacation. I need a vacation. I know where I want to go. But anyway, I can't believe it. How many summers does a man have in his life? You know, after many a summer dies the swan. Huxley wrote a great short story by that name. And you have to ask yourself what it's all about. What it's all about. So we did the x-ray machine, the fetus in a nun's trunk, mom cooking, Philip Morris, dad on couch, the two cufflinks, sad and happy. You know, I don't know. How many stories can a man have? It's amazing to me that all these stories are real. And I hope my story, the stories of my life haven't, you know, ended where I'm just telling old stories. It's amazing to me that if I go out on a bicycle, sometimes I can come back with a story for this show. It's a matter of perception. What I'm getting at is even a boring, everyday, humdrum life can have a story in it. Even whatever you're doing for a living, I don't care what it is, how humble a life you have. If your ears are open and your eyes are open and your heart is open, you're living a dynamic life. You can be going into people's houses, let's say, as a repairman. What are you seeing? What are you noticing? What's going on in that house? There's a story for you. So, you know, we all live in quite a dramatic world, unless you're, you know, cut off from people, like a talk show host, for example. Prisoners even have dynamic lives when you think about it. Every day is another adventure as to whether they're going to get through it without getting stabbed or killed. So there's an adventure in everybody's life. And I suppose that, as they say, that's what keeps life interesting. I'm cutting into storytelling time. I don't know who to take. I don't know which person to take here. I'm going to take somebody, this body, that body, da-da-da. So I don't know what to take. Here, we go to this one. Los Angeles, Kevin. Go ahead, please. Which story would you like me to tell?
Michael, my favorite story of yours is when you're a kid in your father's antique shop. And you're standing in there, and a normal Joe walks in. I forgot what kind of guy he was, and he didn't look like anybody, you know, prestigious. And your father treated him like a king. And you didn't expect him to buy anything, and the guy ended up buying, like, a bunch of valuable pieces. And he walked out spending a ton of money.
Yeah.
And your father looked at you, and he said, "Let this be a lesson to you, Michael. You treat everyone with respect like they're a king because you never know who they are."
You got it 100% right. He was a black man from South Carolina or North Carolina who owned an antique store himself who would come to my father's store to try to buy these. To him, it was a wholesale buy, even though my father wasn't a wholesaler, because he could take them down there and sell them for a lot more in the South. And he had very good taste, as my father did, in the statues that he had picked from the importers. But I'll never forget, you know, you'd figure, oh, in those days, all the white men were prejudiced towards black. The opposite was true. There was less prejudice then than there is now because of the civil rights movement and the loudmouths like High Jackson and the Reverend Sharpton. They have provoked more racial hatred and enmity in this country than any two people before them, as far as I could tell. But that's my opinion. The fact of the matter is, this black man came in the store And not one man in there was anything but a white man in the selling. And rarely did you see black folks in the store in those days. We didn't know him from a hole in the wall. But my father treated him with dignity. He didn't know who he was. And he said, well, how much is that? And how much? And they spoke very nicely to each other. The man didn't chisel him either, by the way. He just took out a pen and he wrote down what he said. Okay, boy with harp, girl with banjo, man with horse, you know, like that. 700, 800, 900. He said, all right, I'll take all 17 of them. He virtually took out the entire inventory of what my father had in front, which for him was amazing because he made the month's nut. You know, there were months went by that he didn't sell very much in there. I can tell you about those days, another story. But the truth is there is a moral to the story, which was a boy learning from his father, irrespective of whether you did it for any reason other than for commercial reasons, which is to treat every man with respect because that's the way you want to be treated. Thank you. Thank you for remembering that. I forgot that story. I remember those days. You know, how about the jinx? I don't know if you're a merchant with stores. There's very few people left that we even have a store anymore. Everyone has a business, a this, a home business, an internet, and that. But if you have a store, a retail store, I don't know if it still goes on. So you'd have merchandise up there, you know, a small store. And sometimes weeks would go by, he wouldn't sell an item. Now, I got to tell you, when you're living on the proceeds of buying and selling in a little store and you have no government handout, there's no safety net. It gets pretty frightening for the principal breadwinner. There was mother didn't work. We didn't work. We were in school. And he'd go by, and it would be week in and week out. I remember sometimes a lull, like hitting a wall, like no wind in the water in a sailboat. And sometimes he would say to me, I got to break the jinx. I got to break the jinx. I said, well, how are you going to break the jinx? So if a guy would come in or a woman would come in to buy something from him, he'd cut the price down to a level that below what he paid for it. And I'd say, Dad, why did you sell that clock for less than what you paid? He said, I had to break the ice. Now, I didn't know what he meant. He always used nautical phrases, now that I think about it. Does he know the ropes? Does he see from the mast? You know, what do you mean you got to break the ice? It's like breaking the ice, an icebreaker, in order to get through that sea, that sea of dawn. So anyway, he broke the ice, and usually the jinx was broken after that. Isn't that amazing? So there's mystery and magic even in a retail store.
Savage.
So I went aground in the mud yesterday. I had to wait for the high tide for 6 hours. And the dogs got scared as night descended upon the bay and we were stranded. Ah, what the heck? What the heck if the Coast Guard came and couldn't do anything for us because the mud was so deep and we were so far in it. And I was not piloting. Incidentally, you want to see how many metaphors I can tell you about going aground? And I mean hard aground. Hello, this is Michael Savage. I'm hard aground somewhere in the vicinity of the Richmond Yacht Harbor. You know what had happened just before that? And there's so many metaphors to this story. Well, first of all, there's good and bad in everything. I don't know if you know what going hard aground means. If you hit a reef, you usually go down because the reef cuts the bottom of your boat open and you sink. If you're not watching what you're doing or you're not reading your charts right or your depth finder is off, you might go up on mud. And if you do and you go in at a low tide, you're going to wait 6 hours for a high tide to float you off that mud, which I had to do. It could have been much worse. I could have gone hard aground at high tide, which means I would still be there because there's no way off at high tide. But you know something? I'm an impatient guy. And I've heard the phrase, God, it was as boring as watching paint dry. No, sir. I've got something better for you for a new metaphor, but it's not so generally known that people would get it. It's as boring as waiting for the tide to come in because that's what we had to do. Went aground at 3 o'clock, called the Coast Guard. They came out. They couldn't get within 100 yards of us. All I said was drop your anchor, put on your life jackets, and have a nice day. He said to me, the next high tide is at midnight. You should be able to float off at 10 o'clock tonight. I said, yeah. So from 3 o'clock to 10, the dogs couldn't make, and that's the part that bothered me the worst. I mean, we had food and water. It wasn't life-threatening. But the fact is the poor doggies got to me. Teddy was worried. Because he was up on the bow of the boat and looking, and he could smell the land. He could almost hear people. It wasn't that far away. And the poor boy, after 4 or 5 hours, he had to go. I got to the point where my little finicky, everything has to be perfect boat, I said, Teddy, crap on the deck. Please, dump on the upholstery, Teddy, pee on the steering wheel, whatever you got to do, I don't care, man, this is an emergency, okay, let go of the anal retentive stuff, man, do it, dump on the sofa. He didn't do it, but the little one did. She listened, she overheard, and the teacup peed on the sofa, which I really don't care. But I got to tell you something, any couple can go aground. It depends upon what the couple is made of as to whether they how they get off that sandbar. And a lot happens in a few hours. And this is no heroic thing. I'm not putting the context of being adrift for 29 days in a lifeboat and killing a sea turtle. You know, I'm not talking about that. In my little hothouse rose life, the life that I lead, the little constrained life that I lead, it was somewhat of a big deal to go aground because I'm a careful guy. I never make mistakes like this. My boat is my treasured possession. I'm also a very careful boater. But there's a little story coming. For about 1, 2, 5 minutes, I relaxed. I went below. I put on a pair of shorts. I don't wear shorts. I don't like shorts. I hadn't worn shorts since 1970. But it was a balmy day. I said, oh, look at this, Bermuda shorts. And I sat backwards up on the flybridge. And I lifted my legs up, and I wasn't even drinking. The next thing I know, nothing's happening. All right, these things happen. It was my mistake for not paying attention. Da, 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 da. I'm not blaming anybody because ultimately it's my boat and I'm the captain. So therefore, it's my responsibility. But the fact of the matter is we had to sit for 6 hours. And, you know, we didn't even go aground at low tide. We went aground an hour before low tide, which means that we had to wait an hour and watch the mud come up even higher. And then I went down in the dinghy and went around the boat, and this thing looked like it was in dry dock, sitting in the mud. I got to tell you, as a guy who's finicky about the maintenance of his craft, it didn't feel very good. And that's what it was. So it got dark, and there was nothing to do. And I couldn't run the a generator because there was no water to cool it. So we had to sit in the dark and talk to the dogs. I couldn't sleep. I was agitated. And all I was doing was waiting for the water to come up. It's a very slow process. You can't rush God. God has his own little time frame. And as I've said to you many times, God sees the truth but waits. This had nothing to do with God. Or did it? Well, I think it did. It actually did. Because over the last few days, I turned my back on God over the last week. I had gotten cynical about God. I did. Now, normally I'm a God-fearing man. God is with me every second of the day, 24 hours a day. Doesn't mean I'm a haloed guy, not by any means. But I, you know when I'm doing the right thing and the wrong thing. And for the last week, I started to get cynical about religion and God and who needs it and who are they, and I can't stand them all. And you know what? The heck with it. I think I'll become a Hindu. And I think I'll get statues with arms on it just to shock the neighbors. I was reaching that point. Well, how do I know that God didn't speak to me in a quiet way and give me just a light slap on the wrist saying, go ahead, keep it up. Go ahead. We'll just put you aground in a little mud and let you float off in 6 hours. And then you'll have to go home in the dark without. Oh, by the way, your emergency radio will quit, too, which it did. Can you believe this? This thousands of dollars radio that I'd like to strangle the guy who sold it to me because I wanted the cheap one. He sold me this piece of crap. I hated it from the day I got it. It died on me just when I needed it. So now I have to go home in the dark on the bay by line of sight, no radar, no chart plotter. And you know what? I did fine because I have very good night vision. But finding your harbor at night without radar, without any guidance is very interesting. It brings you back to a different part of yourself and actually opens you up to, just different feelings. And then when I got the boat in, I will tell you I had three vodkas straight in a row. And it didn't feel bad. As a matter of fact, it felt quite good. By the time the third vodka hit the brain center, which I aimed for, God, if only there was a little spot in your head you could open. See, if I were to talk to God when I get there and say, look, why don't you redesign us? Here's what I'd suggest. Put a little spout on the top of the head that you could put something in and you could just pour it right in on the brain. Why kill the other cells? You know what I mean? anyway, by the time I hit the third vodka, and I was sitting on the deck looking at the boat, and she was so beautiful. I mean, I don't blame the boat. I blame me, okay? She was so good. This boat is so great. She ran fine, cool. I purged the mud because I ran it slowly. This is a good boat. She was good to me. So the dogs are a little today, you know. Teddy looks hurt. As a matter of fact, when I sat on the deck with the third drink, he gave me his hind. I mean, I don't mean he gave it to me to take. he put his behind towards me. He wasn't like, oh, happy, Dad, I'm happy. We're all happy. No, no, it wasn't like a cartoon. It wasn't the Donald Duck and Walt Disney, the ending of the cartoon. Teddy turned his behind towards me as if to say, look what's under my tail. That's what you are, okay? I don't steer boats, right? I'm just a dog. I'm a couple of pounds. I trusted you, okay? And you went aground, okay? Look under my tail. That's who you are. You got it? And don't even talk to me, all right? Have a nice night.
Savage.
Oh, I hope that you don't take umbrage with me for digressing from politics too much with family stories or life stories. I know many of you like stories. Some want the hardcore politics. So go to my website, michaelsavage.com. There's plenty of them up there, and I can talk about them from today until tomorrow, and I will do it as I do all the time. But summertime is a different time. It's a story time. Let's go to the callers. 1-800-449-8255. I hope you're enjoying the show anywhere in America today. WTNT in Washington, D.C. Gary, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, you're a true orator, man, from like centuries and stuff. Yeah, I love adages. And I can identify. I don't think there's a bad story you've ever told, man. It's cool.
Well, I do. I have a storyteller's gift, and every one of them is real. Every one of them is real. There's not one made up. I don't know how to make up a story, which is why I was never a fiction writer, Gary.
Doctor, what I was talking about is that I love all the stories, and the one that resonates the most with me, 12 years in the Marine Corps, all the different stuff I've done, I had a... You know, different things in life. But if you could relate some of the Fiji Alzheimer's stuff as well as, like, how you got turned on to IF, because I use that with my kids. And
By Rudyard Kipling?
I mean, I could talk to you about a myriad of things, but that one...
Go back to something you said a minute ago. I don't want to dismiss anything you said. You said the Fiji Alzheimer's thing. What do you mean by that? You mean how I was researching ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and in New Guinea and all of that, and how that led to my work in the Alzheimer's field, all of that. So it's an interesting – I never talk about the years I spent doing research, never. I never talk about it, Gary, because I assume people aren't interested.
With that. So it means
– Yeah. You know. Well, but let's talk about the kids and the poem IF. It's a great poem to raise children with. I mean, they don't have a lot of time and a lot of attention span with all of the – imagery coming at them and all of the distractions in our society. It's a life-giving poem. Do you remember any of the stanzas from it?
Well, just the one that, if you can walk with kings but speak to, you know, have a common touch.
That's the one. An older man said that to me when I was like 20, 21. He said you ought to look into the poem IF. He said it goes like this, and he remembered one stanza. If you can walk with kings and never lose the common touch, then you'll be a man, my son. And that came to be true, you know. I think that's what you're saying, which is never lose the common touch.
And it's basically a guide for how to guide them in their life. Without today's world is so degraded. I mean, that's why.
Oh my God! Well, it's not only degraded in the world of human beings, but it's degraded with our culture. Look at the cultural references when you turn on a TV or you turn on the internet. Are there any cultural references to great literature or great music or great poetry or great scientists or great artists? Nothing. It's all debased garbage. Every reference is to a debased, degraded human being or a human being's production. Every reference is a degradation.
Yes, sir.
It is. It's rotting out the mind of the West. So, Gary, let me send you a gift. I'm going to send you a wonderful gift today for you and your children, the Freedom of Speech Award. Please stay on the line. And we'll get that one shortly. 1-800. I'm enjoying this today. I was really tied up with this privacy issue and trying to catch this guy and all of that, speaking to postal inspectors, detectives. And tomorrow morning I'm meeting with the detective who's going to take the pornographic postcards that he sent to my office. We're already going to be in touch with his web server. They're all going to be served with a lawsuit. And we will find him. And he will go to jail for this felony. I can guarantee you I'll disclose his name when we do this on this program. And maybe it'll be a warning to otherwise wise guys on the left out there who think it's a joke tampering with a person's safety and the safety of his family. They're going to find out that they can disagree with me 1,000%. They can even hate me as I hate them. But when you cross that line and you try to become a wise guy criminal and you break the law, you're going to jail. Moreover, I'll take away your property and I'll take away your parents' property. If you think you're going to play with this, that it's just a college exercise, I'll wake you out of your pothead stupor. I guarantee you, you'll get like a pail of cold water in your face when the judge slams that gavel down and he says guilty. I guarantee you suddenly you'll be crying in that courtroom. And then when you go to prison, you're going to meet a lot of nice new friends. And they're all going to know that you posted my home address on the internet in an attempt to have people harm me. And you sent homosexual pornography to my office to insult young women. They're all going to know what jail you're in and what cell you're in. Because I want them to make certain that they give you a birthday cake for all of the 5 years that you're going to serve for doing it. That's all. See, I didn't mean to go back to it, but it came back up. It flared up again. So I was saying that that distracted me, and I thought I was going to do an hour of the show live because I was tied up with all of this today. But after that hour, I started telling stories, right? And here I am 3 hours into the show, fully awake, fully alive, wholly alive, because it goes back to that primary thing about work and professions and life. If you love what you're doing, you never get tired doing it. Or really, I mean, you don't really get tired doing it. And if you hit that point where you're tired all the time, it's because you're bored. And the reason you're bored is because you're boring the people in talk radio. And if you're going to do Democrat, Republican, and play Hillary Clinton and this one and that one and Romney and Schmamney, who wants to hear it anymore? If you want to listen to that, you can turn on the television and hear this rubbish for the next 1,000 years. How much can you take of that? Now, I cannot do stories every day. You got to understand there's only so many stories, and you can't do this all the time. If I did 1 hour of radio a week, let's say I did a classic 90, you know, radio show from 50 years ago. They don't exist anymore. If I did the Michael Savage Story Hour once a week, I would tell you only stories. I'd never do politics again. I'd have a humongous audience, but I guess you can't monetize a show like that, these single shows. They don't work. There's no money in them. And we'll leave it at that. Frank on WOR, New York City calling. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you're an inspiration, number one. Been listening to your stories and your show for a long time, and I have to ask you a question. I know I look at your website, and I see pictures of Teddy, and I recently got divorced, and I got two Yorkies in the deal, two small Yorkies that I love to death. My question is, when I walk these Yorkies, you know, I love them, and then you hear these testosterone-laden guys making comments every now and then when you walk with
them. What you got to remember is the men who make comments like that are fundamentally extinct. They're extinct. I mean, pay no attention. They may think of them as a dinosaur standing next to you. What? They're just jealous that you can love a little dog. What kind of dogs do they have?
Right. And you know what? Talking about, you know, you walk with these dogs. These guys are always going to bars looking for women. You want to meet women, you have a little dog instead of a pit bull. You'll get tons of them coming up.
Yeah, you got to ask yourself, what kind of woman's going to be attracted to a man with a pit bull with scars on its face?
Yep.
Frank, where do you live in this city?
I live actually in northern New Jersey in Bergen County.
What? So you got Neanderthal guys up there who snicker at you because you got Yorkies?
Typical, yeah. Your little Guidos up here, and they look around the dogs, and they make these little comments, and these are the greatest dogs in the world. The greatest dogs.
Yeah, I understand it hurts and it gets under your skin, but Frank, you can't let these low brows bother you. You can't, because it's all the time. Wherever you turn, you're going to get Neanderthals like that. I had an incident very much with my dog along the lines. Listen, I was with Teddy a few weeks ago down by a yacht harbor, right? I usually keep him on a leash because there's a leash law out here, and he doesn't bother anybody. So this schmuck comes off a boat. He's probably gassed up with his dumb friends, Neanderthal-like guy, the kind that you never see out here very often. And he lets his dog run loose, and the dog runs right towards my dog. Now, I lost a little dog. In fact, I lost a Silky in New York in front of my eyes. A Dalmatian ran at it, jumped on it, bit it, and killed it in front of my eyes 30 years ago. So I have a little dog. That dog came running at my dog. I grabbed Teddy in my arm, and I used the command voice on his dog, and I screamed, "No! Stop! No!" And the dog stopped. So the guy says, he says to his drunk girlfriend, who was herself wearing a wife beater shirt, he says, "Oh, I used to know a guy like that." You know, like in a sneering, offhanded comment. "What do you mean, used to know a guy like that?" So I said to him, "Why don't you follow the leash law, which exists here, and then your dog wouldn't run at people?" So he said something to me that was... So I turned around and I looked at him. He was with two friends. He figured he had me outnumbered. He's with the girl. So all I said to him very quietly was, I said, "I thought men like you were extinct." He didn't know how to react to it. He was too stupid. But his girlfriend understood what I had said. And she was the troublemaker, as you well understand. It's always the woman. So she made a crack. He made a crack. And you know what? I walked away from it. Nothing happened. The point I'm making is, Frank, you can't react to everybody who makes a remark like that. You love your dogs. Isn't that enough? What the heck do you care what that moron says? You know, buy him some cannoli next time.
Yeah.
So how old are your Yorkies?
They're 3 and 4.
And you got them. You know what? You have all the love. You got the remnants of all the love in the relationship are in those dogs.
That's right.
That's right. The dogs bring out the love in all of us. And when the other thing disappears, they still carry the love, Frank. And you got to remember that. That's the love that you have in those two dogs. And don't worry what these schmucks say. They're nobodies. So good luck in your good luck hunting there with the little. You're looking for the women like Carmela Soprano with the double knits. I love those outfits with the crosses and those double knit outfits. Man, they were nice. Do people still dress like that in the Sopranos counties of New Jersey, Frank, the women?
If you go down there, it's a big thing. Every pizza place down there has the pictures, the autographed pictures of all the Soprano characters, you know?
No, but I'm saying, do women still dress with those outfits, or was that staged? Is this for another time, or do the women still wear the double knits with the crosses and the whole thing?
Yeah, you go to the right areas, they do.
Ah, that's great. It's like a walking museum of reality. It beats what I see walking around in San Francisco. I got news for you. Hey, Frank, have a nice day. Enjoy your dogs. That's the end of this hour on the Savage Nation. I've really enjoyed it tremendously. Foot x-ray machine, the fetus in a nun's trunk, mom cooking, Philip Morris, dad on a couch, the two cufflinks, sad and happy, black buyer and dad shop, going aground, and many, many other stories. Hopefully there'll be many, many stories to come. With God's will and your listenership, you shall return to the Savage Nation every day that God gives me the breath to talk with you about borders, language, and culture.